let's talk about is recorded and produced in Treaty 1 territories, on the original lands of the Anishinaabe, Cree, Oji-Cree, Dakota, and Dene peoples, and on the homeland of the Métis Nation. Thank you very much for listening. At 3 o'clock in the morning on Saturday, September 24th, Hurricane Fiona made landfall in eastern Canada, specifically Nova Scotia. It is now Monday. The storm has passed, and the people of eastern Canada are beginning to put their lives back together. There are still thousands without power in the area, and two Canadians have lost their lives. Just as of, you know, this was updated 22 hours ago, in total, Hurricane Fiona had passed through portions of the Caribbean and eastern Canada. The death toll stands at 9. Approximately 12,500 people have been displaced in those two areas. At least 20 buildings have been destroyed. And it was a Category 4 hurricane. Already, cleanup efforts are ongoing. This is as of 4 p.m. Today. This story is happening. This was about an hour ago, the time of recording this. As of 4 p.m., there were still 170,000 people in Nova Scotia without power. Nova Scotia Premier Tim Houston announced an unprecedented relief package of $40 million. For residents impacted by Tropical Storm Fiona this past weekend. This is from an article on Global News. Some of the hardest hit areas were Cape Breton Island. And, you know, I know a few people who live out in Nova Scotia or have family out in Nova Scotia, and my heart goes out to them. It is always terrible when things like this happen. And unfortunately, I'm the person here to tell you that this is going to become more common as we move forward. Just some other quick facts here from the government of Nova Scotia. Crews are currently delivering additional fuel in gas stations. I've seen some TikToks of people who are pointing out that there are hour plus. Somebody, I think one person wrote there was a 6 or 7 hour lineup for gasoline in Nova Scotia. Some gas stations are running out of gasoline. The emergency health services in Nova Scotia had their highest one-day call volume ever recorded. More than 200 people in Cape Breton were evacuated from various properties due to fallen trees and damage to property. 800 plus power line technicians, forestry technicians, and damage assessors are working across the province. And Nova Scotia Power has restored power to about 241,000 customers in that province so far, with still some work to do. And early on, just a few minutes ago, I said that this is going to become much more prevalent as time rolls on, because as I've said many times on this show, we are in the era of climate change. We are in the era of climate disaster. ocean warming and the increasing floodwaters have continued unabated. Things have slowed, to a degree, but we will still see significant destabilization in global climates. We are still going to see mass desertification. We are going to see floods. We are going to see droughts. We are going to see crazy storms, wild swings in annual weather patterns and climate. And one of the most destructive pieces, and one of the pieces that's going to impact the most people, is storms like Hurricane Fiona. And it's easy to look at this situation, say only two people died, some thousand people are without power. But that really misses the fact that, first off, those two lives are major losses. It is always a tragedy when someone passes. We don't need a major death toll to look at something and say this is a problem, and this is something that we need to be prepared for if it happens again. And it will happen again. This is an example of how our society is structured. Our infrastructure is built in a way that is not conducive to living in a climate disaster world. Last week, I talked about the tulip turbines and how it is very important for people to start pushing to become energy independent, having solar panels, having wind turbines, to be able to generate your own power, because there are going to be times where the power grid fails you. It hasn't happened very often here in Manitoba, thankfully. Usually it takes a pretty significant storm, but those significant storms are going to come. Those really bad winter storms that we've seen the last couple of years are going to come. And something like this, Hurricane Fiona, shows that the infrastructure in Eastern Canada, while it is hardy, while it is set up to stand against some very significant, very destructive storm systems, fails, and our need for, our ability to get them food and water and power fails in the face of a storm like this. First off, something we got to know is, how exactly does a hurricane form? This is like grade school geography. This is something that, all of us have learned at some time in our lives. So I'm going to give you a little bit of a refresher. So hurricanes occur when there is warm ocean water. So you have wind blowing across warm ocean water, typically cold air blowing across ocean water. You have warm ocean water, the moisture rises, it evaporates, the heat in the environment, the heat in the water causes the water to evaporate, where it meets that cold air passing through, and that moist, the air evaporates and rises, moistens the air, creates humidity. And that cold air causes that moist air to cool, and the water within it turns into condensation, forming large storm clouds. All the clouds you see are a similar effect. You have water evaporating up into the air, where it gets, obviously, the higher you get, the closer to the upper atmosphere you get, the colder it gets. So that moist air begins to cool, and the water turns into condensation, which hangs in the air and forms clouds. Clouds are basically the fog and mist that we see when the conditions are right on the ground. So when that cooling water, when that condensation forms into clouds in the air, the water cools, that warmth that is in that water, the energy that has made the water warm and caused the evaporation, doesn't just disappear. It doesn't just go cold and it's gone. That energy has to go somewhere. And that heat transfers, that the release of heat, because it does, clouds do release a lot of heat when they begin to cool, because they have to cool, they cool very quickly. And that heat transfer creates a lot of energy, and pushes air around it, which creates strong gusts of wind. You know, what you experience as wind is really just changes in air temperature and air pressure. You have warm air meeting cool air, and you have warm forces, you have the energy releases of warm forces as they cool, pushing air particles around, which cause wind currents. So what you have in the creation of a hurricane, you have warm water that evaporates, meets cool water, turns into condensation, releasing tons of energy, tons of heat energy, which pushes other air molecules around, creating strong winds. Because it is so hot, so warm, it releases a lot of energy and causes strong winds, which then meet up with more cool systems, and they turn into a cycle, and this hurricane begins to form. Now, where does this fit in an era of climate change? How does climate change make hurricanes bigger, more frequent, and more destructive? Well, it all comes down to the warming of the oceans, the warming of ocean water. Because the Earth, the vast majority of the Earth is water. We as human beings may only see land because we live on it and we can really only exist on it. We forget how, especially here in, you know, a landlocked area like Manitoba, we tend to forget and take for granted how much water there actually is on Earth. So for the most part, sunlight, UV radiation is hitting the oceans. It is hitting the oceans and taking in whatever blue wavelengths of light there are, because the oceans are blue. That color draws in the light, which the visible spectrum is blue, and the rest, you know, the light diffuses into the ocean, which causes the oceans to warm, and then, you know, that's just how sunlight works. And most, or a good chunk of it, all that is not part of the visible spectrum that is absorbed into the oceans and dispersed, gets deflected back into the atmosphere. Most of these UV rays, most of the UV rays that hit the Earth every day, most of the sunlight that hits the Earth every day hits the ocean and is bounced back into the atmosphere. The problem now is that we have the layer of greenhouse gases on top of, in our atmosphere, that the refracting or the reflecting UV radiation and the reflecting sunlight can't permeate. Effectively, it does, some does get through, obviously, I've said many times at the show, but that most of it is reflected back down. And because most of the Earth is water, it comes through, bounces off the ocean, goes up, bounces off the greenhouse gas layer, goes right back down to the ocean, disperses more, bounces back up, hits the upper atmosphere, disperses a little bit more, and comes back and forth until enough of it is dispersed and out into the atmosphere. But this is causing, because there is so much ocean water, and crucially, because there is more blue carbon than there's ever been before, because, you know, as I've talked about a few times, the carbon that's in the atmosphere, sometimes it sinks into the ocean. The ocean is a carbon sink. It takes in tons of carbon. And that causes the ocean to hold on to more of that heat energy, because it's not just, you know, the warmth dispersing through all the water molecules and the salt molecules. There's also the all of the carbon that's in there that holds on to that heat energy. So the oceans are progressively getting warmer and warmer. The more carbon there is, the more the oceans store heat energy and get warmer. And the more of a greenhouse gas layer there is around our Earth, the more UV radiation and the more heat energy is trapped and cannot escape that atmospheric layer. So the oceans are gradually getting warmer. And as I said earlier in this episode, what causes hurricanes? Well, you have warm water that evaporates. That's the start of a hurricane is when warm water evaporates and goes up into the atmosphere where it meets cold air. And it doesn't get as high as the atmosphere, but you get have cold air that goes up, meets that cold air, and turns into condensation, releasing tons of heat energy, causing strong winds, and creating storm systems. So the warmer our oceans get, the more energy is trapped within our oceans, the worse or the more frequently we're going to have storms, because we have more of the building blocks to storm conditions. We have more of the conditions for forming these hurricanes because the oceans are getting warmer. So so that is only one part of what makes these storm systems even worse, because hurricanes are not just the blowing wind. They are not just the cycle of strong winds that, you know, tears down buildings and knocks over light poles and trees. It is the rainfall, then storm conditions that come with it. When you watch footage of hurricanes, there is lots of rain, there's lightning and thunder. So you're bringing in stronger winds. The warmer the oceans, the more evaporation is there is, the more heat transfer there is, and the stronger the winds are generally, so the stronger the storm system is. And the more evaporation there is, the more moisture and water vapor there is in the atmosphere, and the more water vapor is transferred into these storm systems. So physically, the storm systems get larger. This is why you're going to see more Category 4 and Category 5 hurricanes and tropical storm systems. Because there is more water vapor there, there's going to be more rain and more significant torrential rains, which is going to cause more flooding, like we're seeing in a lot of these areas that have been hit. It's not just the wind and the hurricane itself that causes the damage. It is the flooding that causes the damage. It wipes buildings away. We saw a couple buildings in eastern Canada get pulled off into the ocean by the winds and flooding. And another way that these that climate change and the warming of the oceans is going to impact storm systems and hurricanes, specifically on the coasts of Canada, are that sea level rise is going to make storm surges worse. So a storm surge happens when water rises above normal levels and is pushed inland by wind. It's when you see like the massive waves of water washing onto shore and washing into towns and cities on the coast. Going back to Hurricane Katrina, it was a storm surge that caused the levees to fail, leading to the utter destruction of New Orleans. It caused $2 billion in damage to New York City during Hurricane Sandy. So what this does is, because our ocean levels are getting higher, so since 1900 is when this data goes back to, since 1900 to now, the global sea level has risen half a foot, and that doesn't seem significant, but like I've said before, a lot of our infrastructure and, you know, homes and businesses, power and water and all of the things that we need as a modern society have been built with certain conditions in place. But, you know, four inches of that half foot have happened in the last 50 years, since 1970. That's most of that 6-inch rise happening in less than 50 or in just over 50 years. So what this does is means that there's more water that can be pushed inland by these storm surges, which can reach farther and cause more destruction as it moves in. Because what's happening, one of the things, the warming of the ocean, warmer water expands. When ice melts, that is the water expanding, and the molecules expanding out to cover more area. They're getting excited. And warmer air or warmer water takes up more space. It expands compared to cold water. So what we're going to see moving forward is because we have the ocean levels beginning to rise and the gradual warming of our oceans, not only are we going to have stronger storm systems that are, you know, we're going to have more frequent tropical storms because the conditions to create tropical storms, a lot of them just rage out in the ocean and dissipate and never get anywhere near habitable land. But we're going to see more of these storm systems being created because a lot of the conditions that create hurricanes, a lot of the conditions are around habitable areas because human beings have flocked to those areas because they are conducive to an easy, comfortable life. So we're going to see, because of the oceans warming, because of the expanding, the rise in ocean levels, we're going to see more frequent tropical storms. But because of that expansion, because of the warmth of the water, we're going to see more intense rainfalls. We're going to see more intense winds and higher categories of hurricanes. We're going to see more intense storm surges as water rushes, you know, over the banks and into habitable area, or, you know, I guess habitated areas. We're going to see much more of that. But the earlier number that I want to turn you to from this episode is the 12,500 people who are displaced. And we're already beginning to see these popping up here in 2022. And that's the concept of climate refugees. At a certain point, it will not be feasible for people to live in certain parts of the world. There are already countries in the Middle East that are facing this. There are small island nations that are facing this in the equatorial world. Even some areas of North America are starting to see land that was once comfortable to live on become nigh impossible. We are seeing more and more people being displaced because the land they live on, the homes that they have built have been destroyed. The towns and cities they live in are no longer habitable. And that problem is only going to get worse because we have more and more of these storm systems. It's 12,500 from this storm alone. We already know that parts of Puerto Rico, actually the entirety of Puerto Rico, has not yet recovered from the last tropical storm that they had. They haven't recovered fully, and there's already another one that has hit them. That's Hurricane Fiona. We have areas of the world where people probably can't go back to. Their homes are gone. Their communities have been washed away. It's not financially feasible for them to go back. There's nothing to farm. There's nowhere to place a house. And, you know, some might go back and try and rebuild. And as they've seen in Puerto Rico, sometimes that is for naught because another storm system comes and destroys what you've tried to rebuild. So those people are going to look elsewhere. They are going to try and go somewhere where they can live, where they can build a life. They are going to not have a safe place to go back to. So they will become refugees. They will be from nations that no longer exist. And that is something we need to be prepared for. We need to be ready for those people to wind up at our doorstep and to bring them in. We have to be ready for that. I want to read you something from the UN Refugee Agency. How does climate change affect refugees? How does UNHCR help? In 2020, UNHCR deployed teams to assist relief efforts in Central America and southern Mexico, where an estimated 3 million people had been affected by Hurricane Eta, one of the worst weather-related disasters in the region in the past two decades. When tropical cyclone Idai hit Mozambique, Zimbabwe, and Malawi in March 2019, UNHCR relocated refugee families to safer shelters and provided them with tents, plastic sheeting, sanitation equipment, and clean water. Similarly, UNHCR has been helping Rohingya refugees in southern Bangladesh to mitigate the effects of monsoon storms, flooding, and landslides. People already displaced for reasons other than disasters linked to hazards, including refugees, stateless people, and the internally displaced, often reside in climate change hotspots where they can be exposed to secondary displacement and reduced chances of being able to return home. In the case of the Sahel region, which is facing one of the fastest growing displacement crises in the world, in this region, intense and largely indiscriminate violence perpetrated by armed actors has forced almost 3 million people to flee both within country and across borders. This growing humanitarian and protection emergency is exacerbating pre-existing challenges faced by the region, including climate change and environmental degradation. We are already seeing this problem popping up. Like, this is like Zimbabwe, Mozambique. These are countries that are not Bangladesh. These are countries that are, where a lot of Canadians probably know people who are from these countries. And they have lived with difficult conditions. They have built lives around living in harsh climates or places with great monsoon storms where they're used to things like this happening. But it's getting to a point where it is too tough for them to bear. It is too significant. The storms are too bad. The heat is too bad. They can no longer farm where they need to. So they need to move and go somewhere where it is safe to return. So the UNHCR, it's the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, just so we have a name out there and you know who I'm talking about when I say UNHCR. According to the UNHCR, an annual average of 21.5 million people have been forcibly displaced by weather-related events such as floods, storms, wildfires, and extreme temperatures since 2008. These numbers are expected to surge in coming decades, with forecasts from international think tank the IEP predicting that 1.2 billion people could be displaced globally by 2050 due to climate change and natural disasters. And what's going on right now in Eastern Canada should be a marker for people that the concept of a climate refugee is not some far-flung thing on some, you know, other part of, on the other side of the world where, you know, in an quote-unquote underdeveloped nation or whatever definition you want to give it. Climate refugees are not a far-flung issue. What is being shown in Nova Scotia is people impacted and displaced in many cases by climate disaster, by the impacts of climate change. It is entirely possible that the coastal regions of Canada will one day become a place that is not safe to return to and may stay that way for a very long time, potentially decades, maybe even centuries. It is not a far-flung, crazy, issue in the providence of science fiction. This is something that is potentially very real. We could see climate refugees from PEI, from Nova Scotia, from New Brunswick. We could lose these beautiful, beautiful places that are part of the fabric of Canada and what Canada used to be and what Canada has always been. These are not people from a far-off nation fleeing persecution. These are not people from a place that is being turned to desert. These are not people who can go somewhere else. These are our neighbors. These are our fellow Canadians who are being affected. And if we don't pay attention, if we don't make serious changes to make life more livable and make life safer, they could be the next climate refugees. I want to thank you very, very much for listening. That's the end of the episode today. If you're listening live on 101.5 UM FM, keep the dial on 101.5. You got some great songs, great shows coming up right under this one. And if you're listening on Spotify, thank you very much for your download. And as always, have yourselves a wonderful, wonderful week. Stay safe.